Life Audio.
Ooh, friend, what a hot topic we have today. Have I changed my mind on Ozempic? Well, in some ways I have. In some ways, maybe I haven't. But that's where we're going today. I'm going to kind of take you through my pros and cons and talk about, really, does the Bible have anything to say about weight loss drugs? We're going to look at that and so much more surrounding this topic today. I'm glad you're here. Hey, if you're brand new, boy, you've stepped into a hot topic. You may not want to start here because we're going deep today. But if you're curious, I'm glad you're here. Hey, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to some of our best episodes to start with if you're new. So go check that out. And hey, friend, you still have a shot to go through the 40-day body image workbook with a group of Christian women. The group I've got going now is having a great time. We're ready to finish up next week, but we're going to start again on May 21st. So go to improvebodyimage.com and learn how you can be part of that. Now let's get to today's show. Welcome to Compared to Who, the podcast to help you make peace with your body so you can savor God's rest and feel His love. If you're tired of fighting body image the world's way, Compared to Who is the show for you. You've likely heard lots of talk about loving your body, but my goal is different. Striving to fall in love with stretch marks and cellulite is a little silly to me. Instead, I want to encourage you and remind you with the truth of Scripture that you are seen, you are known, and you are loved no matter what your size or shape. Here, the pressure is off. If you're looking for real talk, biblical encouragement, and regular reminders that God loves you and you're not alone, you've come to the right place. I hope you enjoy today's show, and hey, tell a friend about it. Ozempic. Okay, you know the tune. Maybe you've heard the commercial. Wegovy, Victoza. We got a long list of names of drugs that were originally created to help people with type 2 diabetes and were recently approved for weight loss. And last June, I did an episode on Ozempic, and I really was trying to just kind of look at the facts, but I've been convicted of something, and the conviction happened after I watched Oprah. Okay, go figure. But Oprah did a special just this week. If you're listening live when this podcast episode airs, she did a special on Tuesday night. I think it's available on Hulu now, but she talked about Ozempic and these weight loss drugs and how they have worked for her. And then she shared stories of other people that have found them effective. And so, you know, Oprah's quite convincing. So my opinion, my needle may have shifted a little bit from that last episode. And I will say I was trying to be neutral in that last episode. But I also want to clarify, in that last episode I recorded for you on this topic, I was talking to the person who maybe has always struggled with the 20, 30, 40 pounds of weight. Some might call that vanity weight. You know, I don't know that I love that term. But the person that maybe has always had a, I think they call it mid-sized or larger body and really wanted to be a small. And if you're that person, like, I get it. I see you. I know you. I really understand that desire, that plight. But that's who I was talking to in the last episode. That was the type of patient that I was considering when I went through my list of, here's the reasons I probably wouldn't consider Ozempic. But the Oprah special kind of opened my eyes to another category of people who may want to take and may benefit from these weight loss drugs. And so that's where we're going today. Whew, are you ready for it? I'm not sure I am. This is such a big topic. And I want to handle this with grace and compassion. So let me start here, and this may be an unexpected place. I've done an episode on this topic before, and I'm going to link to it in the show notes, but let's talk about righteousness just for a minute. Okay, Tim Keller used a definition of righteousness that I never heard before, and I just thought it was fantastic. And he said that righteousness is really being right with someone. And so internally, we all long for righteousness. We want to be right with others. But the most important righteousness in our lives is to be right with God. And friend, there is no way that you can find righteousness in doing anything to your body, whether you shrink your body, whether you expand your body, whether you eat clean, whether you eat only packaged foods, like none of that is connected to your righteousness with the Lord, which is the most important type of righteousness for you to have. You are righteous in God's eyes only through Jesus, period. And so what I think happens for a lot of us is we live in this world, in this broken world, in this culture that tells us all these different ways that we need to be right with people, right? And even amongst ourselves, friends, even my Christian friends, we don't do an awesome job of allowing righteousness to be vertical. Sometimes we enforce our own sets of righteousness in a horizontal way. You can be part of our friend group as long as you are into this type of exercise or into restricting this type of food or into eating this way or into doing this one thing, right? Like, oh, we have some prejudice and some bias. And some, oh, I hate to say this, but here it's true, some pride around the way we do things or the way we think about things. And we really have to fight hard not to believe that these ways we have determined to live our lives have anything to do with righteousness, because they don't. So my friend, even if you feel like your body has made it really difficult for you to fit in with other people, to be accepted by other people, to feel like you belong. Like, I get it. Oh, and my heart breaks for that experience. But I want you to know that your righteousness with God has nothing to do with your ability to be right with other people. Has nothing to do with their approval or disapproval of you. So I want you first to understand what we're talking about today from a foundation of this truth that through the gospel of Jesus Christ, you are already loved more than you could ever imagine. You are seen, you are known. And that struggle, those tears you've cried, that hurt you've felt, that is not lost on our Lord. He sees it. He captures every tear. He knows the hurt, and it gives us so much grace. So back to Ozempic. Like I said in the intro, I think that this is a tricky issue when you look at all the different demographics of people that are invited to take these weight loss drugs. And the Oprah special was fascinating to me because Oprah only interviewed people that were, I would say, like in a larger body than she's ever had. Like, and of course, you know Oprah's story, right? She has been up and down with her weight. And I did feel so much compassion for Oprah as she was sharing just, you know, the shame she battled. I mean, her body was like front page, like joke fodder, like late night talk show joke fodder. Like, I can't even imagine how difficult that would be and how shameful that would feel. And so I can only give her grace in understanding why I would do anything to have a smaller body if I didn't know that my identity was in Christ and I was feeling all of this outside shame and pressure around what my body looked like. So nothing but grace and compassion for Oprah. But I thought it was interesting that the people that Oprah invited onto the show were people that had larger bodies than she did. And both of the women whose stories she kind of focused on were women that were well over 300 pounds. The one was a 16-year-old girl who was 300 pounds, I think at age 13 or 14. I need so much compassion for their stories because it really did sound like they had tried everything, right? That, you know, they were miserable in a body that didn't fit into cultural norms or cultural standards. And by that, I mean, they couldn't buy clothes at a regular store, even a plus size store. They would have to buy 2 airplane seats to fly somewhere, right? There are ways, I mean, even my church, goodness gracious, I was thinking we got new seats last year and I was thinking there's no way that a person with a larger body would feel comfortable sitting in these chairs because there's armrests and that really limits the amount of space you can fit into in these seats. There's so much in our world that is not accommodating to someone with a larger body. And so I have so much grace and compassion for those people. Maybe it's you listening who wants to change that. And if this is a medical intervention that could change that, I can understand why you would be willing to throw the risks aside and try it. I get it. I have nothing but compassion for that. And right after this quick break, I'm going to talk about some more reasons why these drugs may actually be useful.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
So as I watched the Oprah special, the other thing that struck me was Oprah kept saying that there was something broken in her brain and that these drugs fixed that broken thing in her brain. And as she described it, you know, these are semaglutide, I think it's SGLP-1. Remember, this show is just for information purposes. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a dietitian, right? I'm just a friend talking to you about it. So that's why my science is going to be a little bit sloppy, but that's, you can go find other podcasts if you want all the specific details on these things. But Oprah was talking about how there's a hormone, and it's the hormone that helps you feel fullness and maybe to some degree helps you feel hunger too, but that's broken. And for her, she felt like when she started taking Ozempic, or it may have been Wegovy, I'm not sure which one she's specifically on, but when she started using it, it allowed her brain to stop thinking about food so much. And she felt like it fixed that, let's call it a broken circuit, right? Because our hormones communicate with the rest of our body. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about the reality that I take thyroid medication because my thyroid is broken. Now, I think my thyroid is broken from years and years of restricting food, which may loop back around in this conversation, so stay tuned. But my thyroid is broken, and I am very grateful that there's wise doctors and scientists who created an intervention for me to take a pill every day to help my thyroid function. And so if that is really the case, if this is a case of there's a body part that's not functioning properly, and there is a medicinal intervention to help that body part function properly, again, friend, that makes sense to me. It made sense in a way that I had never really considered before. But here's where it's a challenge. The challenge to me is the way these drugs work to help you lose weight. So with my thyroid pill, a lot of people lose weight when they go on thyroid medication. That didn't happen for me. In fact, I just recently upped my dose, and I'll be honest, I kind of thought, oh, well, maybe I'll drop a couple pounds because my thyroid was getting sluggish again and I needed to go up in dose, and it didn't happen. But the way thyroid medication works is that it speeds up my thyroid, which helps my metabolism, which helps my whole body's engine burn more. the way these semaglutide inhibitors, the way these things work is almost like an appetite suppressant, right? Where they turn off or turn on whatever hormones so you aren't as hungry. And here's my concern. You lose weight because you don't eat very much. Now, here's what I don't know. I don't know if the women that Oprah interviewed that weighed more than 300 pounds, I don't know if these women were eating, you know, 6,000-7,000 calories a day, and then they start with the Ozempic or Wegovy or Victoza, I think one of them's on, and they drop down to like 2,500, 3,000 calories a day. Like, I don't know if it's that kind of drop or if it's from 5,000 calories a day to 500 or 800 or 1,000 calories a day, which we know is not good for your body. We know that you will lose weight that way, but what are the long-term consequences of not eating enough? And I take you right back to that Minnesota starvation experiment. Now, everyone that's on these drugs, the one declarative thing that they have said is that as soon as you stop taking the drug, you will gain the weight back. And it's a little unclear to me. Are you gaining the weight back because you stop suppressing your appetite? And then like the Minnesota starvation experiment would have proven you are so hungry after starving your body for whatever period of time that you, you know, go back to eating all the things and the weight just comes back. Or if there's something else like being suppressed with the drugs, with the shot rather. And then when you stop taking the shot, like that thing is let loose and the weight comes back. I'm not sure on that. But that's something to be curious about. And here's why. I'm going to tread carefully here, but I feel like a lot of doctors, a lot of the medical community is really focused on weight loss, but they're not really well educated around eating disorders. And I've seen this way too many times, even with family members, where they're getting congratulated for weight loss. And I know what's behind the scenes and I'm thinking, no, this is actually eating disorder behavior. Yes, there's weight loss involved, but this is not something to be praised because the person's not getting enough nutrients. The person's not eating enough. And for someone who had disordered eating and an eating disorder for most of my life, I know that my life goal, a secret goal, I wouldn't have told you this out loud, but was trying to eat as little as possible or really trying not to eat so that my body would be as small as possible. And the truth is that's not good for our bodies. Yes, it does result in weight loss, but it is bad for our bodies because God made our bodies to run on food. And when our bodies can't run on food, they're very smart. And they find other ways to cope. And so one of the things that happens with any kind of dieting restrictive behavior, but it's also been studied with these weight loss drugs as they do body composition tests, right? You are going to lose some fat, but you're also going to lose muscle because your body needs certain things to function and it can get more of that from your muscle. And so one of the stats that I read was that with Ozempic, they found that people lost up to 40% of their muscle mass. Now, again, I'm not going to pick on just the weight loss shots for this, because if you go on any restrictive diet where you are eating 1,000, 1,200 calories, you're going to lose muscle too. And I can tell you from experience, I had my body composition done, oh, probably 7 or 8 years ago. And I had a smaller body. I was still probably in like my eating disorder body at that point. And my body composition was horrible. Now, you should also know I was teaching at least like one or two fitness classes a couple of days. I mean, I was probably getting in 4 or 5 fitness classes a week. And I worked out aside from that. So I was doing things that should have been building muscle, but I was, I think what they call a skinny fat person, because I didn't have good muscle mass from all of those years of dieting. And so that's a risk that I don't see on the label of these drugs. But if you go off of the drug And, you know, of course, you've got the risk of gaining it all back, which is almost a guarantee. But even when you do, you're going to have less muscle, and less muscle slows your metabolism down even more. So it feels like if you do have to go off these drugs, and remember, they're expensive, or they might not be available, you know, because of demand, or something could be recalled. I mean, hey, remember, friends, in the 90s, Fen-Phen came out as a quote-unquote anti-obesity drug. It was going to solve everyone's problems. And in 1997, they had to pull it off the market because it caused some sort of heart valvular problem, right? So we don't have any studies longer than 5 years on these medicines. So let's say you have a good run, 3, 4, 5 years with it, and they pull it for some reason. Friend, you are going to gain it back because that's the promise, but you're going to have less muscle than you did before. Now, some have said, okay, you can work really hard at trying to like keep your muscle up. But the bottom line is if you're not getting enough calories, your body's going to use that muscle, right? And that's what we see happen in eating disorders all the time. That's why eating disorders like anorexia, bulimia are so dangerous, because as your body eats its own muscle, your heart's a muscle, your organs, like eventually those things become food for your starving body. And that's why it's so dangerous. The other danger of not getting enough calories regularly is something called gastroparesis, right? And GI side effects are the biggest thing with these weight loss drugs. So a lot of people can't even tolerate them. I've had family members that couldn't tolerate the drugs because they made them so nauseous, so sick all the time. It just, you know, wasn't worth it because they couldn't actually like function and live. They were spending so much time in the bathroom, so they had to go off of it. And Oprah did interview someone like that who just had a horrible experience with her GI symptoms. And they asked her if she was going to try something and try another one of them, because they all, I guess, are slightly different. And she had this look on her face like, I don't know, I don't really want to go back to feeling as bad as I did. So much compassion for her. But even for those for whom it's effective, gastroparesis is when everything slows down digestively. And I've worked with so many clients that have eating disorder, anorexic backgrounds. When you eat less food over long periods of time, digestion slows down and things get complicated, right? We're talking constipation. We're talking sometimes intestinal blockages, right? It's just bloating for like no reason. You're like, that food never made me bloat before. And now I eat a little bit of it, and phew, right? So there's some discomfort there that I think could come or would come from these weight loss drugs really helping you restrict your calories in the same way that someone who has an eating disorder would restrict calories, and you have the same symptoms. And it's not a good time for those of my friends that are trying to recover from eating disorders. This gastroparesis makes it really difficult. And so to that end, it worries me. I feel as if this is like a medically sanctioned intervention to help someone have an eating disorder. And that might not be fair. But what bothers me is that they present all of these other risks of being overweight as so much more deadly and damaging than having an eating disorder. And that frustrates me a bit. And I know that if you're considering, or if you thought about using one of these drugs, or maybe you had a conversation with your doctor about using one of these drugs, the reason was probably not vanity. It was probably to help, you know, something else going on in your body, whether it was to help your diabetes, like that's the conventional use of this drug. And I think that makes perfect sense. But maybe it was to help something like heart disease. And now you have to weigh the risk of, okay, the doctor is making it feel like unless I take this drug to get skinny, I'm going to die of a heart attack really soon. And that's a scary thing. Like, so much compassion and grace if you're having to make that decision, because that is a tough call to make. I will say that when I'm coaching women, you know, I have a lot of these conversations where women have been presented with this scenario at their doctor's office. Okay, I've got this family history. That's always the word, family history. But I just want to pause around that for a moment, right? Because we all have a family history of something, because all of us die. So your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, you know, however, your parents might still be alive, but people that came before you have died of something. And so therefore, every person you meet has a family history. I mean, unless I guess everyone got hit by a bus, but that's not the norm for most of us. And so we feel this pressure and responsibility and obligation around, well, I have a family history and I know my family history and I have to be aware because of my family history. And this is new, right? Like, we're the first generation to have this like burden of family history. And so, yes, be wise about that, of course, but I don't know that we have to wear that as the heavy cloak of responsibility that it's been like presented as, right? Disease is complicated, right? And stress is actually the number one killer. So yeah, maybe your grandfather died of a heart attack. Maybe your great-grandfather also died of a heart attack, right? But what was their stress like? What other things were going on in their lives that maybe also played a part of that? And maybe it didn't actually have anything to do with their weight or their size. Maybe it was these other factors. It's so messy. It's so complicated. And so much grace for you if you're trying to figure this out. I think about those women that Oprah had her show that really needed this help. If I were the mother of that 16-year-old girl who had gone to weight loss camps, who had had bariatric surgery, like she had tried everything. And, you know, and she tells a story of like having to custom make a Disney princess dress for her daughter because they didn't make them in her size. I mean, I don't know what I would choose. That would be a really difficult decision. And I so appreciated that the mom even said, she's like, I want her to know that she's okay, that there's nothing wrong with her, that she's enough, that we love her just as she is, that her body, she didn't say it in this way exactly, but what I heard was like, her body is good. And yet we also want to help her feel like she can live a more normal life. Oh goodness, what a position to be in. So much grace and compassion there. And I was reminded as I watched that story that deciding whether or not to take these weight loss drugs, to use these weight loss drugs, is not a moral issue. There is no verse in the Bible that says thou shalt use weight loss drugs or not use weight loss drugs, right? It's unclear, I think, at this point, as to whether or not there's any, you know, dangerous side effects, long-term side effects, those kind of things. But that's a risk that always exists when there's medical intervention, right? I mean, I've had a couple surgeries and I have to sign away like, yeah, you could get an infection from the operating room and die. Like, just sign here that you know this, right? There's always a risk that we will do a medical intervention that could have negative side effects years down the road or sooner, right? So I don't think that in and of itself, we can make that some sort of moral or biblical case for not using it. No. And the other thing I've heard is people say it's cheating. And I don't agree with that either. Thing one, as Oprah described it, it's she felt like there was just something missing. Like she just needed something to help her body do something differently around food. Now, a little aside here, I totally understood what Oprah meant. And I feel like I fixed that through intuitive eating. I fixed that through stopping the diet mentality, through stopping restriction, and really even stopping mental restriction. So I feel like I don't think about food all the time anymore, like Oprah said she does. And Oprah said that these drugs helped her not do that anymore. So I do feel like maybe there's a missing link here that intuitive eating could fill, but maybe not. Maybe there is something medically required here. I really don't know. And I don't have the expertise or the information to kind of make a judgment call on that. It's not really my call to make. But my second point on why I don't feel like this is cheating is I think we have to be very careful in terms of our own self-righteousness around our methods, right? And I did an episode on exercise non-responders last year, which totally stunned me to even know that this was a thing because I was a fitness instructor for so long. But the data out there shows that you've got, I think it was like 5 people that do the exact same exercise for the exact same period of time. And you'll have like 3 to 4 that have like noticeable results in their bodies that you can see on them. And then you'll have 1 to 1.5 that won't. And they might have internal changes, right? Some of their, you know, their blood pressure or, you know, blood sugar, or some of those things might improve because they've started doing regular exercise, but you can't tell looking at them. And so they're called exercise non-responders. And that kind of opened my eyes to this reality that all of our bodies are different. And some of us have a really easy time with exercise. Some of us can just tweak a couple things in the way we eat and our bodies completely change. Like some of us have an easy time manipulating and controlling our bodies, and some of us don't. And it doesn't have anything to do with willpower or laziness or intelligence or anything like that. It's just the way we're made. Because the reality is, right, for some of us, weight loss is relatively easy, and for some of us, weight loss is near impossible. And the reason for that is that our bodies are made to protect us, and weight loss kind of goes against that protection. Right? Our bodies don't want to lose weight. And so if your body is really holding on to weight, there's a good chance it's doing that for a reason. It wants to keep you safe. It doesn't want you to starve. It might be worried after years or decades of you restricting and then going off the diet and restricting, going off the diet. It might be worried that there's another diet coming and it's like, whoo, we're going to hold on to everything. Right? But I mean, pragmatically, I don't really know what's going on in everyone's body, but I have learned that I need to not be so judgmental about it. I need to have compassion and grace that we are all built differently. And I'm saddened by this reality that as a culture, there's no room for that. Culturally, it's this is the body type that's acceptable. And I think that God made us with more diversity than that. I don't think we can read our Bibles and say this is the body type that's acceptable. I don't see it there. There's no scripture that says thou shalt try to make yourself as thin as possible. Right. And it again, it's just not how God designed our bodies. So we're going against something natural there. So is it cheating? No, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's a fair assessment because some of us have it easier in this department than others do. But again, I go right back to some of us have it easier in having disordered eating or an eating disorder than others do. And I don't know that that's a good thing. And if this medication is simply making it easier for more people to have disordered eating or an eating disorder, I think that's problematic. And I wish that instead of a doctor just prescribing one of these drugs, that maybe they would first prescribe working with a dietitian or getting some help from someone who can actually help you heal your relationship with food. And maybe that's happening. I mean, I feel like the reason I was always like afraid of dietitians was I thought you went to the dietitian and they gave you a meal plan. And I do think that that still happens with some dietitians. But what I more often hear when I talk to people is that the doctor told them to just go on a diet. Like, have you tried low carb? Have you tried keto? Have you tried Atkins? And didn't really give them any other support other than just go, hey, go lose weight and get back to me when you do. And compliance with that was really poor because, as we know, 96%, 97% of diets fail. So it's really difficult to go on a diet and lose weight for the long run. And so what it feels like is the medical community is like, hey, these shots are like better compliance than the diet prescription ever was. And maybe this is exactly what some people need, but maybe it's not what everyone needs. And again, we're in the position of putting something out there for the whole world that really should be reserved just for a subset, because maybe there is another intervention for most of us, and that might be working with a non-diet dietitian. I have been blessed to work with this fantastic group of non-diet dietitians, like my friend Amy Carlson, my friend Tracy Brown, my friend Charlie Castle. Like, these are women who really want to help you heal your relationship with food. And so I guess it's the question of like, what's at the root? If the root of the issue is an unhealed relationship with food, then that's the correct course of action, in my opinion, would be to like try to heal the relationship with food. But what if that's been tried? Is a medical intervention okay? I feel like it has to be. But again, there's dangers and there's risks. And at what cost? Not just at what cost to you financially, but at what cost you physically. One final thought on this topic, and this is where I really feel like we need to do better as Christians. Okay, so this is my pep talk for those of you who are listening that are believers and followers of Jesus Christ. The young girl, the 16-year-old girl who was given, I think she was given Victoza because she wasn't, like, I don't think Wegovy is approved for children. But she talked about after she lost her weight, she finally feels seen and she feels noticed. There was another special on Nightline, and it was called like the Skinny Tales or something like that. And it was like after Ozempic stories. And it was really interesting. The primary interview they did there was with a woman named Heather Day. She's 49 years old. She was on The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And she wrote a book called Bad Mormon. But Heather was kind of always in the, it seemed like maybe 12 to 14 size range, while all the other housewives were, you know, were tiny. And she talked about like how they would mock her all the time. They would just give her a hard time. She was wearing something that was designer, and one of the women was like, that can't be designer because I know like Louis Vuitton doesn't make anything in a size 12, or, you know, those kind of comments, those kind of jabs. And she used to be kind of a, I guess, an advocate of body positivity. And this goes right along with my 40-day body image workbook, right? Like trying to cover the shame she felt with body positivity and pride. Like, no, I'm happy with my body. And she used to be an advocate for that. But she went on Ozempic. And now I don't know what size she is, but she's smaller. Let's call her maybe a size 6. And she's like, body positivity is a lie. Like, it's just so much better to be thin. Like, life is just so much better as a thin person. She says she's treated better. She feels seen. She finally feels valued because she's thinner. And she wishes she had taken the medicine 20 years ago because she would have had a completely different life because she would have felt valuable and seen. The other person in the Skinny Tales special was Dr. Pepper, who is on Married at First Sight. So you might know her from that. But she's like a marriage and family counselor, marriage therapist, and she took it as well. And she talks about how our looks and our identity are interwoven. And so when your looks change, your identity changes if you look like a different person. And part of that was related to another story from that same show where they interviewed a man. He was a chef and, again, lost several hundred pounds or more than 100 pounds using Ozempic. And after he lost the weight, his marriage was over because he and his spouse just didn't have anything in common anymore. And so Dr. Pepper's kind of explaining that, you know, well, that kind of makes sense because he's become a different person because he looks different. And so my admonition, my challenge, my struggle as I process all that is like, of course, like that makes sense. It's true. And I think I've even talked about on the show before, like I've known women who, you know, got married in a, let's call it mid-sized body and lost a bunch of weight after marriage and husband didn't notice enough, but people at the gym did. And it led to big problems. It led to big struggles. Their identity and purpose in life shifted from, let's say, all the other things in life to a focus on me and my body. And I think that's problematic, right? And I don't mean that we're not supposed to, that taking care of our bodies is bad. I don't mean going to the gym is bad. None of those things. Let's not be black and white thinkers here. But just this reality is that when we are so uber focused on our bodies and changing them and getting our identity from that and making that what we feel is valuable about us, that is not a firm foundation to root an identity in. Right? That is sinking sand. One accident, one stroke, you know, one injury that lays you up for 6 months, one diagnosis can change all that in a flash. And so as believers and followers of Jesus Christ, we have got to have our identity rooted in something that is not our bodies. Now, hear me. Am I saying that if you use these weight loss drugs, then that means that your identity is rooted in your body? No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying that if you decide to use them, your biggest struggle may no longer be physical. It may be spiritual and mental. It may be mental because you may struggle with an eating disorder that is medically induced. And it may be spiritual because the temptation will be to bask in the appreciation and approval and love you feel around your new body. And it will be so easy for that to become your God, for that to become what your life is about. It will be so easy to make that an idol. And so that's what you have to be on guard for. Similarly, those of you who that aren't even thinking about taking these drugs, like it's not even on your radar, like I would just encourage you that maybe we can take from this an admonition that we need to be careful not to be judgmental or biased, or I'm going to even say prejudice, against people with bodies that are different sizes than ours, right? Those people, we need to see everyone, right? We don't, the scripture tells us, we don't get to pick and choose who we love. Right? So what would it look like knowing that people with larger bodies may be struggling with not feeling seen? What would it look like to be more intentional about loving everyone well? One of the women that Oprah interviewed, her name was Amy, she said when she lost 167 pounds on Ozempic, and she said, people treat you better when you have a smaller body. It's like you're a different human being. She said people were nicer to her children. She got better treatment, especially in the clothing stores, and that she really felt bad for the old version of herself. It's like she's a new person, the way she's speaking, right? But how many people just had this attitude around her of, well, you just need to not eat and go to the gym and then you'll be good. And how that just wasn't true for her. And she held so much shame around that because she couldn't just make that happen. Oprah, as the show kind of concludes, talks about her own struggle and how she became part of the Weight Watchers board in 2015 because she started counting points and she thought like that this was it. And she lost some weight on Weight Watchers and thought like, you know, she had found the cure once and for all and bought a bunch of shares of Weight Watchers. And then she started gaining it back. And she shared that before this special, she actually had like given away her shares of Weight Watchers stock so that she could do this from an unbiased or really, I guess, not having a conflict of interest because she no longer owned Weight Watchers shares and Weight Watchers owns this company now that does weight loss drugs. So she disassociated herself with all of that so she could do this special more journalistically without that conflict of interest. But she talks about, and she talks to the Weight Watchers president, I believe it is, about how Weight Watchers is a behavior change program, but it was missing biology, and how they provided care for people and they helped people, but the people that it didn't help, the people that walked away without success, walked away with a lot of shame because Weight Watchers was missing biology. And to me, that just perfectly fits with everything we've talked about on the show around intuitive eating, right? Intuitive eating is biology. And no matter what diets we try or how restrictive we got with our eating, like our bodies are going to want to do what they're going to want to do. And Oprah actually talks about set point theory and some of these other things, but she was spot on. Diets fail 96% of the time. And we are missing biology if we expect diets to work. Does that mean we need weight loss drugs? I don't know. That decision's up to you. Then Oprah closes the show by kind of going through all the different viewpoints. Like maybe you're just happy and healthy, celebrating life in a bigger body, or maybe you're just like all about diet and exercise and that's the only way that's going to work for you. And then she, you know, talks about how there's space for all points of view. But she uses this word, like hers, maybe like you've done this and you've just found freedom. And as we close today, I want to just remind us all, right, that Freedom doesn't come through weight loss. Yes, you might feel more comfortable, absolutely. But freedom comes through Christ alone. And the rest that we crave, the rest that diets and really even weight loss drugs can promise us, like, okay, if you do this, you won't have to think about your body or food anymore. Just, you know, lose the weight, do this thing, and then you'll be able to rest. Like, it never comes. I surveyed the women on our 40-day body image reading journey and asked how many of them had met their goal weight and then thought, just 5 more pounds and then I'll feel better about myself. And almost every woman raised her hand. Just be aware that the body image idol promises you that weight loss will fix it. Weight loss will bring you freedom. And it may bring some degree of freedom for some amount of time. But the real heart of the issue is usually spiritual. And what I've also found is that women with larger bodies who have lost a significant amount of weight often find themselves more obsessed thinking about their bodies more after they lose the weight because there's so much more attention on them and praise given to them around their body size that it feels really risky and dangerous to let anything happen to your body where you would lose that praise, attention, approval, and acceptance. So it's not the cure, friends. It might help, but it's not the cure to our body image issues. There's so much deeper than just what we see on the outside. So it's up to you what you choose. You've heard the risks. You've heard maybe the benefits too. But what I truly hope is that you will know without a shadow of a doubt that God made your body good, no matter what the impact of this fallen world has been on it. God's not surprised at how you look. He's not disappointed in you. He loves you. He sees you. He knows you. You are righteous through his son and through his son alone. And I hope that you'll find your identity in that. Thanks for listening today. I hope something today has helped you stop comparing and start living. Bye-bye. The Compare To Podcast is proud to be part of the Life Audio Podcast Network. For more great Christian content, go to lifeaudio.com.
Hello, I'm Adam Comer.
And I'm Ryan Chittister.
And we are the host of Life After Addiction Podcast. What we believe is that addiction is not a surprise to God.
That's right. We discuss addiction from a biblical worldview and how true freedom comes through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Absolute freedom from addiction, the secular worldview of once an addict, always an addict, is just not true. If you or someone you love struggles with addiction, subscribe to Life After Addiction at lifeaudio.com.